This is CliffCentral.com.
A warm welcome to Leadership Transformation Platform, Multiplying Authentic Leaders, Moving Society. It's wonderful to be with you all the way here from Kruger National Park in the beautiful African bush. And I've got the old man, Louis Groenewald, sitting in Gauteng. There's some beauty to Gauteng, I'm sure. Louis, good to have you with us.
No, it's great once again to be on the show, Adrian.
I'm Adrian Groenewald, and we love joining you every single week for our Leadership Masterclass that runs 12 to 1 on Cliff Central. But of course, we distribute it all over the world in many different forms. Go to leadershipplatform.com. One word, two P's in the middle for all things leadership. And for our Leadership Masterclass today, I think it's wonderful to end the year with this kind of conversation. And I think you'll get a lot out of it. Bob Skinstad, former Springbok rugby player and captain. He turned into a businessman, but he remained a globetrotter, so his business is taking him everywhere. And he's one of those leaders, sportsmen, that seem to have made the difficult transition from being in the limelight and being a sportsman to being a successful leader and businessman. And we want to explore that a little bit. Also, he's involved in something called the 80-20 mindset. Yes, it might be a fairly known principle, but it sounds like him and his partners are taking it to another level. So we'll chat about that as well towards the end of our conversation. Bob Skinstad, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be on the show, and I appreciate you guys having me on the Leadership Platform.
Bob, I'm excited to talk to you. It's always exciting to talk to someone who's taken, I think the world thinks it's very easy to be a well-known sports star and then to turn that somehow into a successful business career or leadership career. And I'm very convinced from all the conversations I've had that it's not as simple as it looks. But before we go there, since playing rugby, what have you been up to? I mean, you've got your finger in a couple of pies, some really good things. But just give us a quick overview.
Thanks, Adrian. I was lucky because I sort of straddled the advent of professional rugby. So I worked almost all the way through. I was in businesses, either starting and funding as a young, naive rugby player. And then obviously because of that, losing money. But it was, I suppose, a necessary progress for me. So by the time I finished my career, which, rugby is a wonderful, wonderful game, and it's an incredible network around the world, but it's a very boring thing to do for a living. So I all the way through, I was always involved in business and interested in business and learning about business and doing sort of internships, and I did some work with friends of mine who'd gone on and got degrees and specialized in things and learned from those guys. So when I came back to South Africa after the 2007 World Cup, I spent about a year sort of looking at different things. I worked almost as a broker, if you want, looking for businesses for people that I knew were looking for businesses. And in that time, I got a chance to have a look at what I wanted to be in. I put some money into a small hospitality business, which I sold my stake of last year. We sort of halved off part of the business, which is an events and high-end tourism business, and we kept that, and we sold off we had a pub chain and a hotel and restaurants and that kind of thing. So I'd been in that for 10 years as a shareholder, more a sort of a silent shareholder, if you want. I did work in the business, but then I spent some time I took on the role of marketing director of a business in the technology distribution space. So for me, it was more about dotting the I's and crossing the T's, I loved your comment earlier. People think it's easy coming out of professional sport. I think the one thing you have to remember from the very beginning, although it's fun, business is hard. It's a difficult thing to do, and life is hard. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy yourself, and it doesn't mean you can't be successful, but it's difficult. And I wanted to go and learn a bit more about rounding the edges of what I did. I'd seen too many people go into businesses not understanding contracts, not understanding partnerships, not understanding exits, not understanding the downside of big ideas and what they can become. So I spent almost 5 years in a more corporate space, while still keeping my shares in the other business. And then over the last 2.5 years, I've sort of exited that, kept my stake in our business, which can now invest in other businesses, and bought a stake in a business called Knife Capital, which I'm very proud of. Knife is a very successful venture capital business. We try and talk about growth equity or growth capital or partnership capital, because pure venture capital is a silly concept in itself, actually, because, you know, we try and partner with the businesses as opposed to just fund them. That led me to helping a friend of mine, a very successful individual who'd been to the UK, and he said, well, I'm very good at the top end stuff, the mergers and the acquisitions and all of that, but we don't do a lot in that space where you've been successful, so why don't we join forces? So I run now the business development for a family office called Draper Game, and I run the London office of Knife Capital.
Yeah, so real business growth there. I like what you said earlier, and I want to hear what the old man says before we move on, and that is the realization that business is tough. I think playing top sports is tough, but your good players make it look easy, and then you know someone is really good. When they make something tough look easy, like business, like playing at a top level, continuing to win the 100 meters like we've seen with some great athletes. And, you know, these great people make it look easy, but I think deep down they realize clearly that it is difficult and that they put in the hard yards and the hard work. I like that comment. You also said life is hard, but all of that doesn't mean you don't have to enjoy it. And I think you're really good if you can enjoy the hardness. Louis, you want to comment quick?
Yes, Adrian. One thing I must say about Bob is I love my rugby, and I love rugby players because of many reasons, Bob. But I would have thought the one person that could make the jump with hard work to be a successful businessman of ex-rugby players is Bob. Because of the nature of your thinking, Bob, all the years at kind of contact with you and the commentary, mate, is always kind of different with a fresh outlook. Even your rugby reflected that. So I must admit, I am not surprised that you have that kind of temperament and even kind of intelligence that can make that tremendously difficult jump.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Now, what is the I want to call it secret. You mentioned something very valuable already of making that leap from being a sporting star that travels to many continents and plays in the limelight and so on, to being a successful business leader. What are two or three things that you have found worked? One being realizing it's hard, or just the principle you shared with us. But what else would you share?
Adrian, I'll try and give you one little story which I think sums up some of them. You know, it's certainly not something I can say, you know, here's a magic pill or the magic ingredients. I think you've clearly got to have the confidence and the drive and the want to get out there and be successful. You know, I maybe come from a slightly older group of players where I could never have retired on what I earned in rugby anyway, you know, and luckily enough, I was able to know that early enough. There will be some players coming through now who could retire after that, and well done to them, and I'm delighted for them. I think they'll probably be a bit bored, but we were sort of amateur, if you want. We were partly amateur, partly professional through my career. In fact, I was an under 19 player when the Springboks won the Rugby World Cup in 1995, and we all know that was a fully amateur setup, you know, before then. So you've got to have the drive and survive and do something afterwards. And two, I think you have to be able to think a little bit about your life. You've actually got to be able to plan, see what you want to do, attach goals to a vision that you have. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a family or a business but you've got to look at an outcome and be able to work back the steps of how you get to that outcome. And now, luckily in sport, you can often do that. You can say, well, if I lift these weights, I'm going to get stronger. So you've got quite good positive, let's call it sort of muscle memory, if you want, of a pathway that works like that. So you can do that. You know, it's like knocking on the doors in a sales environment. If you knock on 100, 10 open, you know, one becomes a lead, and, you know, 220 and two, and so on and so forth. So you can get to an outcome. But the one thing that I think has been the most important for me is that you have to realize what you're good at and what you're not. Now, I told you I joined corporate, and I literally had a scales from the eyes experience where I joined a business that was distributing high-end products in offices, from security systems and digital video systems all the way down to the lowly copier-type environment. And, you know, of course, what you do is, although I was more involved in the marketing, when you get into a sales environment, you try and sell. And I only realized in the last couple of years, and I would say probably 6-7 years ago now, and Louis just highlighted some of it. Louis would be more than happy to be in the room with me, okay? But he doesn't want to buy a copier from me. He doesn't want to buy anything from me. Mm-hmm. He wants to either talk about rugby or leadership or life or his problems. And as soon as I realized that, and then I went to those kind of meetings, and I took the best person possible for the solution that the client needed. And it didn't matter. I'll be honest. I took accountants to owners of restaurants. I took salespeople to guys who wanted video conferencing. I took a hotel manager to a guy who wanted to open a hotel. You know what I mean? Over the years, in different types of examples. And I get into the trust area with the person. We know that we've got something to talk about, something to care about together. And I transfer that trust immediately. And I say, now that we've connected, I've brought the best person for that job for you, 100% more effective in a sales environment, because people trust first in the line that they want to deal with you, and then you can transfer that to the people around you. Now, some people might use that negatively, but for me in business, that's the one thing that has been able to then allow me to say, listen, you know, you don't want an ex-rugby player selling you anything or even looking through the numbers, etc. But I promise you, I trust this guy with all of the numbers on my stuff. So let's get him to help you. And it creates a fantastic relationship between people because you've actually brought something positive to the party.
Mm, that's such a practical, practical thing, Bob. I mean, one would think, gee, was, you know, everyone should click.
That's the thing about that. That's the thing about common sense, especially with ex-sportsmen. Yeah. It's not very common.
Yeah, but again, to what Louis said, the old man, this is true. Honestly, it is. You listen to commentary and you can just pick up from the commentary. There's a common sense there that others may not have. So that common sense, fortunately, has carried through in your business and leadership career. This is a leadership show, Bob. So yes, as you say, people talk to you about leadership. Before we look at this 80-20 mindset principle, because I think that's a great end-of-year conversation, and tell us what you do there. Just give us your 3-4 principles around leadership that you have learned and that you believe in. We have a big leadership deficit world over, certainly in South Africa. We've got the raw material everywhere. We certainly have great leadership, pockets of it all over the place. But we are facing a huge leadership challenge politically, economically. I can go on and on about that, socially as well. What are your views on the kind of leadership we need in the world today, in South Africa, in business, in politics? Do you have views on that?
I do, Adrian. I'd like to do it in reference to some of the things that have happened to me, because I wouldn't want to happen upon a stage where suddenly I'm telling everybody else what to do. But I can tell you two things that I've learned from my rugby career that I think would apply to any form of leadership, and in particular South Africa. And that is that as a sportsman, as a Springbok rugby player and a Springbok captain, I have been both an absolutely awful leader and I've been a good leader. And I know the difference. And I didn't know the difference at the time, but I did know the difference afterwards. So I could look back and say, those were the things I did incorrectly. And, you know, I do think I was picked in a leadership position as a very, very young guy, very naive, obviously very confident and very keen to do well. But, you know, leadership's not a manual that you can pick up off a table. You know, some of it comes with experience. Some of it comes with bumps and bruises. I mean, you know, everybody knows that that's the case. But what happened was, I mean, I went through a career change. I fought with a coach. I basically fell out of love with rugby. And I went overseas. I actually retired from professional rugby. I played amateur rugby for the Barbarians. I'm one of the most capped modern-day Barbarians. I played with everyone from Christian Cullen to Brian O'Driscoll and everyone in between, but literally working out of an ad agency in Richmond in the UK, training on a Tuesday night and a Thursday night with my local club team, and I was still playing with these test match players of the highest quality only because I was available all the time, because everybody else was playing test matches and I could play for the Barbarians. So I played a series of games for the Barbarians, tours to Portugal, Georgia, South America, Italy, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and had the greatest time of my life. And it reawakened a love of the game for me, but it also taught me, I think, how much more you can contribute as an individual if you believe in the team first. And I genuinely believe that John Smith and Jake White made a space for me in the team in 2007 because I was contributing more off the field than purely on the field. And that all came, I think, because as an older player, you realized how much we'd been given by the game, how much the team needed contributing individuals, how much effect you could actually have without physically being the flipping poster boy or the most important or the first in line or the one being interviewed or whatever, how much you could do just with a pat on the back, a word in the ear, an extra couple of minutes of training with a youngster or some work off the field with the team or the admin staff or whatever it is. And that stuff, that is the glue. That's the leadership that I think I've taken away from rugby. And it took me 11 years to learn that. And I only learned it or even applied it for 1 year of my career. I think I did some of it naturally, but I genuinely believe that South African leadership now, we are at that crisis. We're at the crisis now where our leaders in sports and sports administration, are they giving back to the game because they want to create a legacy and make a difference, or is it because there's a role in it for them now, which is something that's self-serving? And if we're at that crossroads now, we're going one of two ways, and I think business finds itself in exactly the same place. There's some really quality leaders in our business environment who might be now at the point, can we motivate them to give back enough in and around the leadership platforms that you're talking about to write the economy, to write all the areas where we need leaders in education, in health and sanitation, all those kinds of parts of what I was talking about now. They become the glue of a society. It's not the big people in the ivory towers making huge big deals and self-enrichment. It's the person who's sitting at the post office branch that's actually making it efficient for the people in his tiny little municipality to send and receive. It's the little people, and the little people, I think, are the biggest difference.
Bob, what I like what you say there, and there's many points, and I'm very sure if we go back and analyze our conversation, we'll pick up on a few powerful pointers there. But I like what you said about falling back in love with rugby, for example. There are so many challenges today for business leaders. They rub shoulders with politicians and with the daily challenges, and then they actually fall out of love with their leadership position. But they keep going. They often keep going. But that principle of falling back in love with it, finding a way to reconnect so that you can see the simplicity of the honor almost of leading, as opposed to just doing it for the wrong reasons. So there's something there that spoke to me. Louis, just comment on Bob's views around leadership.
I'm drawn, Arden, to the evolution that Bob's gone through. This is the way maturity grows. You grow out of yourself, your own ego, into the bigger me, and it's enjoyable to share that with people like Bob.
Bob, lead us to the 80-20 principle, or the 80-20 mindset that you've gotten involved with. I'm fascinated by that, and I say again, it's the end of the year now that this show is on, and I think in preparation for next year, my instinct tells me it could be a very valuable few minutes for people out there, although it'll just be a taste.
Sure, Adrian, and thanks, man. I'll tell you, so as a young player, I don't know if you remember when it seems so long ago now, but the Stormers moved from Super 10 to Super 12, and we started regional rugby in South Africa, and I was the captain of the Stormers, and we ran a Men in Black campaign, and we sort of re-engineered what the rugby was in the Western Cape. And I was a member of that sort of Western Province team, and they'd done quite badly and actually been demoted out of the Currie Cup, out of Super Rugby into, we had to win the night series basically to make it back. And then I was promoted to skipper of the team in the new series, and I was traveling with the South Africa Under 21 team. And I picked up a book. I've always been a reader, and I love my reading. I picked up a book called The 80-20 Principle by an author called Richard Koch. And Richard had basically expanded on the Pareto Principle, which is called the law of the vital few. So a few small causes are it's always – the biggest changes are always attributable to a few small causes. So, tiny little thing. Pareto was an economist, and for a paper that he put in, he was studying at Lausanne University, and for a paper that he put in, he realized that the economy, the Italian economy, almost exactly 80% of it was owned and controlled by 20% of the people. So he wrote a paper. He said, "I wonder if there are any other places I can see this." And he thought, "Let me randomize it." He also grew peas. In pea pods in his garden, and he did a study on the peas, on the pods that came up in that year's harvest, and studied every single pod of peas, and 20% of the pods were the bigger, stronger, longer, more dominant pea pods, and they produced almost exactly 80% of the peas that the garden produced. And it became a lifelong study for him. He then realized and wrote a paper on it. Now, Richard Koch saw this in his own life. And Richard has been an early investor in Betfair, which is, you know, a billion-pound plus business. He was an early investor in Philofax, the turnaround of Philofax. He started his own consulting group after leaving Boston Consulting Group. So a very, very clever, smart man in the world of business, but he realized that this 80-20 principle was something that you could apply to your whole life. You know, 20% of the people that you meet are going to have 80% of the effect on the rest of your life. 20% of your time, actually, what you do with 20% of your time affects 80% of your life. 20% of your customers in almost any business usually generate about 80% of the profits. The sad thing is that the correlation is also true, that 20% of your customers usually generate 80% of your toils and troubles. So sometimes you can turn the 80-20 around and actually just fire 20% of your customers and you free up half your time. So I read this book, and for me it was like a scales from the eyes experience. And we had a very young rugby team at the time. We had fantastic players like Jochie Viljoen, Louis Kuhn, Brayton Paulser, Percy Montgomery, Robbie Flick, guys who went on and played for the Springboks later on. But I realized, I went to our coach and I said, you know what? The problem is we're giving the wrong people the ball for the time. We need to get the good players the ball more often. And we built a framework around the principle. So what happened was Bram van Straaten was also playing inside center for us. So instead of me being the number eight, because I was a ball player carrying the ball up, we gave it to Bram to carry it up, who's 100 kilos faster than me and at a bigger pace. He could crash it up. And then I would come and get the ball when traditionally the number 12 would get the ball. And then I would distribute, and the first person who would get it would either be Percy Montgomery on the one side or Brayton Paulser on the other side. And we realized that when we got the players who were most effective with the ball, getting the ball in their hands the most often, we won quite easily. So we implemented the entire system. I then literally in parallel bought into a restaurant. And the old restaurant that we'd bought had a 30-page menu. And I realized, doing the stats on it at the time, I realized that we had a tomato tart on the menu. Now, tomato tart, the ingredients I mean, it's a quite a difficult thing to make, but the ingredients took up about a square meter of our kitchen. We only had about a 60 square meter kitchen. So, yeah. So one item on the menu that we probably sold two of the entire year was taking up a huge portion of the storage in our kitchen. It was, again, scales from the eyes. The light bulb went off. So we said, wow, let's just look at all of our till slips over the last 5 months and see how many meals people actually buy. And what do you think the answer is? 20% of the items on our menu were eaten 80% of the time. So we cut out 29 pages of the menu, and we had a one-page menu of burgers and pizzas and pasta opportunities with specials. We literally cut down our cost of the restaurant by 50%. The cost of running the kitchen decreased by 50%. So for me, as a young sort of rugby player, being able to translate that into business, I've always then applied that. I've used it in venture capital. I've used it in understanding customers. I've used it in understanding markets. All the kind of things that have applied to my business, I've always used the 80-20 principle. So being the silly man I am, I reached out to Richard Koch and I told him that story. I sent a random email to his publisher and they put us in contact and I told him the story. And he said, well, why don't we do something together? Hmm. So the 80-20 mindset is literally, it's an e-course. Adrian, I'm not a multi-award-winning author like yourself who's got the ability to put prose into action. So I thought I'd love to be published. I'd love to get out there. So I've gone for an e-course option and I've done a body of work on the areas of my life that I changed by using the 80-20 principle. And I've called the e-course the 80-20 Mindset. And I've put it up online and it's been live for a couple of weeks. And I just love the journey now because people are going down it. Young entrepreneurs are saying, I wish I knew about this before. I've been chasing every customer. And now I've worked out that flipping half of these guys were just giving me the runaround. So I've now narrowed my focus and I've fired some customers and I've created more time in the day and I've refined my product and I'm selling more. You know, and I just see it applying to so many parts of young leaders, young individuals, and a lot of millennials as well. A lot of young people now are saying, you know, what should I do for a living? I'm saying, well, have you applied the 80-20 principle to what your options are? Because 20% of the things that you could do are going to generate 80% of the returns. You could spend a lot of time wasting if you follow up on everything. So narrow your focus, understand what you want to do, understand your expertise, make sure the way you do your research is targeted to getting the best outcome for you, and be selfish with your time. Make sure that, you know, the people you spend your time with are actually contributing to yours and their lives. You know, it's a journey we're going on forever. Don't give away all of your time to everybody else and not be able to move forward. So, as you can hear, I'm quite passionate about it. But I've written the course and it's out there. And for me, it's about going on the journey. I do quite a lot of speaking to corporates about it. That's, in a nutshell, that's been the story with me and the 80-20 mindset.
So, Bob, it's I don't know. You know, sometimes in this world of ours, we discover beautiful universal success principles, but then we kind of publish them, we send them into the world, and then the world gets sick of them and it wants something new. Well, that's not the right thing to do. I mean, I'm rediscovering the principles in the book I wrote, Seamless Leadership, for example, and I'm going to bring it out again with more energy and more vigor. I'm falling in love with it again. And that 80-20 principle, we all know, has been around it's been around the block. But someone like fresh like you come along, and you give it fresh life, but same principle. And you've got me thinking about it. I guess one must stop being a lazy thinker. So yeah, towards the end of the year, if I'm a student next year, doing my final year or first year or my little business, or I'm an executive or CEO, let me go revisit this 80-20 principle. Maybe. Tap into your program, your e-course, and maybe get the book. Just do something to say, hold on, we live in a world, sorry, I'm rambling on, but we live in a world where we're spending so much energy on so much, and there is so much to do and so much available, and we end up working day and night and neglecting the 20% things that are making 80% difference in our lives. So I can see it exactly. Applying everywhere. I can see it applying everywhere. And as I talk, it comes to life, actually, to be honest.
I mean, the thing, Adrian, for me is that I know it's an age-old principle, and I know it's one of those things, you know, people, it's like good manners. just because you're sick of hearing about good manners doesn't mean you should stop doing it. And what I've done now, 10 years later, is I've said, you know what, I've actually started living it so much myself that I don't even remind people that that's what I'm doing. But if I meet a young entrepreneur, I say, listen, you give me your top 15 or your top 20% of your customers now so I can understand how your business works. And give me the 20% of guys who give you the most hassle. And then literally 2 days later, I can go back to them and I can say, well, these are the basic problems here. Of course, these people are, here's the common theme. I know that that's the common theme, but you haven't articulated it and been able to deal with it. So for me, if I could transfer it from sport to business and different types of business, it's exactly the same. I bet there's a million people out there who go, okay, yes, I've heard of it, 80-20. Okay, that should be right. But like we spoke earlier with Louis about common sense, it's not applicable unless you get a way to integrate it into what you do.
Okay, Bob, so we're going to wrap up and you can just share with people where they can go to participate in this. But Louis, just give us your comments. I mean, we all know this principle, but you can't take away the honor of a good principle. You can't take away the power behind it.
Bob, we are passionate about the idea that leadership is very personal, ultimately, in spite of all the great theories. Now, what you're saying also just zeroes in on the principle that this applies very much to us understanding yourself better. Instead of focusing on the 100 attributes, 100 pros and cons and strengths and weaknesses, you must learn to focus on the real you, that the kind of inner part of you that really gets things done, like we call personal drivers. And I think this Adrian just confirms that principle very powerfully. I think we waste so much time.
Absolutely. I think you've nailed it there, because it's a very personal thing. And it just like the golden ratio or the golden mean that we see in nature, which is pi, as we know in mathematics. I mean, this is a principle that should apply from every single bit of your life, especially to the personal development side. You work on the bits that make the biggest difference, and you'll make the biggest difference for yourself and for those around you.
Bob, I would sit with a leader this month, spend a one-on-one hour and a half coaching session with this individual who is part of an executive team of running 30,000, 40,000 employees, and you'd have a breakthrough in that conversation, let's say an 80-20 principle. And then in between sitting with them now and sitting with them a month later, so much happened that wonderful progress made just sort of erodes in some way. The life we live, the ability to reflect. I like what you've said today. There are times when you reflected on your sporting career. You reflected on your leadership when you were the mistakes, the good and the bad leadership. The reason you could speak about it today is because you actually reflected on it. You're not a lazy thinker. And that time to reflect on my 20%. And that's what the world is robbing us of, is the ability and the time to reflect. We've got to make that time.
Yeah, that's a tremendous point. I mean, I see with this proliferation of new media and the number of messages we're getting a day from email to all of our social medias and types of things, I think we are allowing ourselves to go and be a bit lazy in our thinking. And this for me is, it's a course, it's online, it's not what I do for a living, it's something I'm doing completely in parallel, and in a way it's almost forced me to reflect. So I'm very privileged to have done that and gone through that, and I look forward to being able to implement it in my businesses as well. But you're right, it's a reminder to relook at those things all the time.
And that's kind of what I've been doing, this live experiment the last almost a year, living here next to Kruger, is it's forced me to reflect. I'm not saying everyone must do that, but everyone must challenge their current lifestyle, challenge everything about what they're doing, because if you don't, the world will not offer you reflection time on a platter. So I think let's maybe end off, Louis, final comments, then I'll let Bob end off with a message to leaders out there. Anything you feel you want to say to them, Bob, you've always stood out as a different kind of player, and you probably had opposition because of that too. You weren't just a usual forward, you know, and your whole life seems to be not just the usual, and I respect that, and therefore your advice will be valuable. Louis, just end off with a final sort of wrap-up.
Bob, enjoyed very much being with you. Also enjoyed very much your kind of passion to get back to your families, sick, children or not. Ultimately, your family is what matters most.
You're a star, Bob, that's right. I can't wait to see them.
Bob, just end of final message to leaders. You know, obviously a lot of South African leaders will listen to this, but we spread the word on social media, so it will be international. But what's on your heart?
Well, I think, you know, I want to say thank you to you guys for the chance to chat today. I mean, it's always, for me, interesting to interact with people who, you know, who care about leadership and want to use it to create. You know, I've always been a starter of things. I don't pretend that that's always perfect, because I, you know, sometimes those are the people who take, you know, I suppose the tallest trees get the most wind, and that's something I can't stop myself from doing. So I'm going to try and not stop myself from doing it. But yeah, I just wanted to say that there are people who listen to your show who sit there and are sometimes reticent to do something. They're reticent to start because maybe they're worried about what the view's like from up on the tall tower, or maybe they're worried about ever, you know, stumbling or tripping or being seen to be bad. And you know what? I think that is the biggest block in your way. We've only got one life. We've got one wild and beautiful life. Go out there and live it. If that means you've got to start something and look like a fool for a little while you learn how to do it, we'll support you. I'll support you. Get behind other people who are doing it. It's the best way to get into something. Nothing great will ever begin unless someone begins it. And I think that is a message that's got to go back to Southern Africans at the moment, but also in that entrepreneurial world. You know, there's a lot of people with a dream that they will never follow, but they'll look out on the stock exchange at some billionaire who did follow his dream and he's gone and changed the world. So I think we've got too many starters who aren't starting at the moment. And if anything, with you guys on a platform like this, I'd love to help those people out there, get a voice out there, make a noise, make a difference, be part of the change that you guys are already advocating for.
Bob, where do people, what do they do to get to this 80-20 mindset e-program or course?
Adrian, thanks very much. It's called the 80-20 Mindset, and it's at 8020mindset.com. There's a lovely intro there, and you're welcome to mail us and have a chat. It's an experiment from me. You'll hear back from me. We've got some blogs going out. You can follow me at Bob Skinstead on Twitter, and also 80-20 Mindset has got its own Twitter handle as well. And we'll be sending some stuff out there over the next couple of months, and available online for contact.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you for that end of message. You know, just go out there and do things. There's one life. It's very sad how people sit back and often watch Idols or The Voice or watch the Springboks play, or we spend so much time watching other people achieve their dreams that we don't channel that energy into our own dreams. And that's the world we live in. So everyone go out there and follow Bob's advice. Thank you so much for joining us while you're on the airport. And have a good flight, and we look forward to connecting with you on a bigger vision, Bob. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Adrian, and your team, and thanks very much, Louis. Lovely to chat to you guys. I look forward to catching up in the future.
Thank you. That's the voice of Bob Skinstead, former Springbok captain and businessman, leader, 80-20 mindset. Just go and Google that and certainly tap into that universal principle.
So, Louis, Bob Skinstead is off catching a flight back home, as he said. Well, quite a nice comment he made. Looks forward to getting home with his wife and ill kids. I'm sure it won't be too exciting. But as you've been taking notes, let's reflect on a few things that he brought up, and then we can talk about one or two other things just to wrap up the very interesting conversation with him. I mean, he is a charismatic guy. As a player, he played at one stage quite charismatically. He was a captain. He's very open about his mistakes and weaknesses, and can see where he led badly and where he led well. And then I think quite a few things stand out. What stands out for you?
I was thinking, Adrian, that in our case, you know, we are enriched with hundreds of conversations with top performers. Some best people are best in the world in their own right. And therefore, certain patterns emerge. Speaking to Bob, and it was really an enjoyable discussion. He's a nice guy. A couple of patterns emerge that I think it's worth our while just taking note of. The one is how good leaders deal with change. Now, we know, discussed it often on the show, that this is an age of change dynamics, and the ability to handle that is so crucial to an authentic leader. Now, Bob Skinstead had to change and grow as a leader. He just couldn't stay or keep on being the charming, very popular player he was before. And these experiences indicate that Bob was willing to change, and he did change a lot. You know, he shows a pattern of humility in terms...
Okay, is that part of the change?
The change, yes.
Okay.
So in order to adapt to life, especially if you make a dramatic change from being a player, a well-known rugby player, to be a businessman, now that's a cruel world to enter from that point of view. And many, many of our very famous players, or sport players, have failed in that process. Bob shows some attributes of authentic leaders, and I think he's being successful, and I'm sure he will be as well. For instance, he mentioned that as a player captain, he did some good things and he did some poor things as well. He recognizes that. The one aspect I appreciate is when he says that he feels that when we won the World Cup in 2007, he made a greater contribution off the field than he did as a player on the field. The way that he supported the support staff, the way that he encouraged the people, the way that he motivated people. And beforehand, that wasn't a consideration. So it shows his ability to change. And I think that's important. Adrian, also, I think it's important to take note of a pattern of how these people handle challenges in life. You know,
Before we go there, just on the change thing still. I mean, people assume because someone has a big name, because they were a sports star, that they can just be successful at anything they do. But what does the motivational source law say? I mean, you, in the end, it is about what I believe and think about me.
And feel
about me
at
the deepest level. So I can be a super sports star, but if I honestly believe deep down that all I'm good at is playing rugby, for me to transition from that deep-seated belief to suddenly believing overnight I'm a great businessman, I can now take the Sharks franchise like John Smith tried and just start running it successfully just because I was a good leader on and off the field, that is a very tall order. People around you think you can because you're charismatic and confident and all those things, but you have to believe it deep down. And I'm sure that's the crisis of confidence some of these leaders face, is they know what's going on in their minds, what's going on in their hearts. They know what beliefs they have about their capability. The world around them see them differently. The world around them have more confidence in them. Imagine being a Francho Pinar, iconic captain of the World Cup winning squad in 95, right? Where can you just have a normal business conversation? Where can you have a normal, okay, what are your needs conversation? You can't. And that's what Bob said. But he adapted very fast. The way he realized my strength is making that connection. And then I've got the best guy next to me to sell the technical. So that was a brilliant piece of a gemful advice that I hope younger players get from him. So I just wanted to comment that on the change thing. I have sat with the Victor Matfields of life and some really good sports people, and they struggle. If they don't consciously reflect on these things, if they don't consciously sit and think, who am I, what am I, what makes me good, what can I transition into the next world, next life, then they just they hardly ever succeed.
Odin, I think you quoted a very basic principle that we feel strongly about at the Leadership Platform, the law of motivational source, where we say what matters most is what I feel, think, and believe about me. Now, that's interesting. If you look at Bob, in fact, all the leaders we interview, the real question we ask ourselves is, what do they really believe and think about themselves? In other words, what they say and the charm they have is not necessarily the same thing. And Bob, like all of us, like every single leader listening out there, you have to realize that you have to work very hard on establishing a self-belief in yourself and the principles and the values you believe in. Because that is the launching pad for all your actions in life. In fact, from that point of view, all we have is me, from that point of view. Everything I do, no matter what great ideas, great spiritual value or truths I get, it's got to go through me as the filter. So this is the great secret of life. You mentioned, Arden, about his, the way he adapted when he entered the business field. And one can just see how he's also experimented quite a bit, Bob. So he's trying to find himself. And then you mentioned an important clue. He learned to, and this is, I just want to mention this principle, Bob has learned to use his charm, his ability. He's very social, well-liked, and even respected. But I think what he indicates to us is he learned where to draw the line. So he'll establish an initial relationship, you know, Bob being the quite a famous rugby player, although that kind of thing also quickly diminishes over the years.
Wears off a bit, yeah.
As it will. But then he says, then he uses that initial trust to introduce the person in his business dealings, because he deals with a lot of partnering arrangements, to the person that really knows what he or she is speaking about in that specific field. You mentioned that point. I like that. So in that sense, it's a sense of humility. I think also what Bob does reflect, I think Bob shows the ability to really develop his own talents as well. In other words, the fact that you realize with a shock that your old talents are not going to make it as well doesn't mean, on the contrary, that you must let go of your old talents, because that has been, those drivers have been with you for ages. They're valuable. It's only when you start misunderstanding how you should apply them that the real problem comes. I mean, the ability to go and perform in tremendous face of many problems and opposition in life, certain great achievements. These are deep-rooted spiritual characteristics. Now, these are the most valuable attributes one has. And Bob, I think, shows the ability. He also showed ability, Arden, that I liked a lot, his affinity with people that have a like-minded to him. The way he adopted immediately the fact that kind of work we do and the people we meet and the vision we have of authentic leadership as well. Bob showed an affinity. And haven't you found that this has been a pattern with the great leaders we find? They have an immediate affinity with people that are like-minded in terms of being able to let go of the old me and develop this new kind of confident me to make a difference out there. And it's great to see that, and we find that's a pattern as well.
Are there patterns that you noticed?
Well, I think the fact that you must realize your limitations, I think, is a very important pattern. Thinking over the years, Arden, we have found many a great leader has shown the ability to recognize the limitations as well. So on the one hand, when you're ego-bound, you just refuse to recognize your limitations. You tend to blame or to label other people or to not be accountable as such. But Bob shows the great attribute of recognizing his limitations and have an idea, and the more you speak to him, the more he's honest about them and probably prepared to admit them as well.
Mm. The other principle was recognizing that life is challenging, or dealing with challenges in life.
Yeah, Arden. Now, obviously, we couldn't discuss all Bob's challenges, but between the various changes he made and the steps he took, we know that it's a case of walking the coals of life. And we haven't met a quality leader yet, I think, that has not walk the coals of life. Remember when I was a youngster in Isipingo down this, on the south coast of KwaZulu-Natal, the Hindus had the regular kind of ritual of walking the coals. And as kids, we thought that is one incredible thing. But the point is, from a symbolic point of view, people's ability to walk the coals of life, that's so we measure them automatically, don't we, Arjun, in terms of the mindset towards resistance, obstacles, etc. And this is a key attribute, a key pattern in the lives of successful leaders. Or else life will get you down all the time if you don't have a mindset that it can be overcome, and I will overcome it.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things we get from him. The 80-20 principle is powerful.
Yes.
He seemed to also touch on recognizing the level or the contribution of people at ground level. You know, the everyone around you, the team. In fact, he spoke of a team element. Firstly, as a leader, recognizing team, the power of the team, the contribution of the team, that it's about the team.
Not just the big the guy at the top.
Not
just
the guy at the top.
Showed
that. The 80-20 principle, you've been on this planet a little bit longer than some of us. Do you buy just that principle, or is there something deeper than that? I mean, he sold it very effectively. We've got a minute to wrap up.
What I love about the 80-20, it's not the 80-20 that matters, it's the principle. The ability to zero in on that which matters most. And that may be, in many cases, 80 or 20%, but that's not the point. The point is the idea of auditing one's life so you spend the right amount of time and resources on that which matters most. That is a lovely attribute. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. What does the 80-20 do? It just focuses you. It just gets you to actually use a model or a philosophy that forces you to do that. I guess there are other models too, but the way he sells it, I mean, if you go and look at your restaurant, you will find the 20%. If you go and look at your business, you'll find, gee whiz, 20% of this creates 80% of that, or
that's
80%
right.
of this is wasting the time, or whatever the whole...
But remember, we had the same experience in reviewing our strategy. We found, wait a bit, that the most important things happens in about 15% or 20% of activities. I don't believe the percentage matters. The principle is that often, and probably in most cases, you should focus on that which matters most.
But we have to get to that point where we honestly live these sort of principles and models in today's society. Because what you have is you've got leaders are just inundated by life, by busy schedules, and surely if you can grasp this principle, and already on Twitter I've had feedback of people that are going through this specific program. If you do that,
but even
just maybe you don't have to work as hard as you've been working, as many hours as you've been working. I mean, all those things are super important in our society.
It's not only the amount of work; it's the quality of you have time then. Focus, innovation, your lifestyle change is an example of the 80-20 principle as well.
Yeah, interesting. You know, living next to Kruger now and spending more time reflecting. Certainly when I'm there, I do work. When I'm here, I work harder. I could probably start attesting to that principle, and the business has never looked better. This year was a fascinating year, and some innovative things can flow. So anything else from this conversation?
No, it just made me focus more in my own life, even this advanced age, to really make sure that I am applying the 80-20 principle in that sense. I do it, but I think it's a case of focus.
Hmm. Thank you so much. So that was a wonderful conversation with Bob Skinstad, who's flying off to London from Cape Town, I think. And our reflection was good too, just to think about it again. Thank you for that, old man, and we look forward to being with you again next week. The Leadership Masterclass every Monday, 12 to 1. Stay tuned.
This is CliffCentral.com.